Play and stay on Washington State's Kitsap Peninsula, the natural side of the Puget Sound. Stand up paddleboarding, hiking, great restaurants and breweries. I'll tell you more about your next vacation destination later in the show. I'm Rachel Bell, and this is Your Last Meal, the show where celebrities share stories about the foods they love most, and we dig into the history, culture, or science of those meals with experts from around the world. Today on the program, Amanda Knox. Amanda became internationally known in 2007 when she was wrongfully convicted of murdering her roommate, Meredith Kircher, while studying abroad in Perugia, Italy. She spent nearly 4 years in an Italian prison and 8 years on trial before finally being acquitted for a crime she didn't commit in 2015. Amanda has since written the best-selling memoir, Waiting to be Heard. She sits on the board of the Frederick Douglass Project for Justice and serves as an Innocence Network ambassador. I interviewed Amanda in Seattle on stage at a sold-out live taping at the end of last year, and it was an incredible conversation. Amanda is so thoughtful, so smart, so well-spoken, and also very funny. Now, I have to admit that I had a bit of an agenda when I was preparing for this interview. I wanted to humanize Amanda, or rather, let Amanda humanize herself. She was at the center of a very salacious murder case. Her face was on every tabloid. The media called her Foxy Noxy. And my hope was that listening to Amanda talk about her experience in her own words would remind people that she is not just a face on a magazine, that she is a real person. All right, let's get over to the live event with Amanda Knox at the Great Hall at Green Lake in Seattle. Coming to Your Last Meal Live. For those of you who are not KCTS members, we had a little reception in this room beforehand with a lot of cheese, and that cheese could be yours if you become a member. We have unlimited cheese, or like three kinds at least. So if you want to become a member, go to kcts9.org/donate. And there's so many events that we do for members that you're invited to. And of course, you are supporting public media. You are paying Big Bird's salary, which has to feel good. Now we're going to thank our partners who also helped make tonight possible. Thank you to Avenia Wine, Fremont Beer and Outdoor Whiskey, and Sparkle Donkey Tequila. So we have a Yuzu Margarita that's on the menu, which was really fun. So give it up for our sponsors. And now for our special guest. Joining me tonight on stage is Amanda Knox. She is a journalist, New York Times bestselling author, an advocate for criminal justice reform, and she also hosts a podcast, because it is the law in America, called Labyrinth, with her husband, who is here tonight, Christopher Robinson. Between 2007 and 2015, Amanda spent 4 years in prison and 8 years on trial for a crime she didn't commit, and she loves cats. That was not a part of the official bio, but I am also a journalist and I did my research. So Amanda, come on out. Welcome.
I do love cats.
You do? Do you have three cats?
I have three cats, and I love them despite the fact that they are not reacting well to a newborn in the house.
Oh, yeah. Amanda had a baby 7 weeks ago.
Yes. So if I start leaking, just let me know.
Yeah.
And so a real concern.
And the lights are bright, so don't raise a hand. Just yell something like,
boobs.
Boobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be the signal. We'll hear it loud and clear.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. This is kind of an interesting interview because the show is generally very light, and we are going to talk about food and fun things, but we're going to start a little bit more serious, and then we're going to get to the fun. It's like dessert. So first we have to have our vegetables. Yeah. So before I started like really digging in and researching, you know, years after all of this happened. Before then, I thought, why would you want to do an interview like this? Why would you want to do all of these interviews? If it was me, I would just want to go hide and pretend this never happened and hope that people just forget completely. So I'm curious for you to talk about why you do interviews like this, why you do interviews with the New York Times and any number of people.
Yeah, that's, I love the way that you phrased that question, because it's, do I want to go hide? Do I want to pretend this never happened? Do I want to disappear? And I think that the answer, kind of frankly, was I did want to hide. Mm-hmm. There was a little period of my time when I first came back that I had this naive notion that I was going to get to go back to the life that I had before I was accused of murder. I would get to go back to being an anonymous college student.
Yeah.
And it became very clear to me very fast that that life no longer existed for me.
Yeah.
And now the name and my name and my face and my identity had been usurped in a big way. And it wasn't just like I was going to navigate the world like a regular person.
Yeah.
I was going to be recognized all the time. And if people saw my name, they were going to associate it with certain tragic events. And I had to really ask myself, do I have a place in this world anymore? And for a while, I didn't really think I did. I didn't think I belonged to the rest of the humanity like most people did. And I felt incredibly isolated. And it made me think, you know, why do an interview? Well, I knew that one of my biggest challenges was that my story was being told by seemingly everybody else but me.
Yeah.
And so I felt like as I was processing my own journey, I should at the very least have my one voice out there as one of those voices. And as I did that, I discovered along the way that my experience, which I felt was incredibly isolating and which I felt like nobody could really relate to, actually resonated with people.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you the number of times people have come to me since then, since I, you know, wrote my book and since I've started podcasting, people have come to me saying, I feel like you're the only person in the world who could understand me. Because I heard you talking about your experience and what you were saying clicked. So I have discovered sort of by surprise that this thing that I felt like completely isolated me from the rest of humanity has actually brought me so much closer.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's true because I've read many things you've written since, I've listened to podcasts, and it was a whole different perspective than what I had ever heard, you know, and everything was all tabloids. When you got out of prison, you were there for 4 years. You didn't obviously have internet or newspapers.
No.
What was it like coming out? How much did you know about how known you were?
I'll tell you that that plane ride home was wild. Because first of all, even just trying to get to the airport, paparazzi were like ramming our car from behind, like chasing us in the darkness. I had to get like escorted through the airport by private security. And then once I finally did get onto the airplane, there were journalists on the airplane who were trying to like sneak up and
get on the airplane.
Yeah, on the airplane who were trying to take pictures of me and trying to like sneak to my seat.
Mm.
And thankfully, like my family situated me in a place that was tucked away. But then, you know, everyone, it's an international flight, it's hours long.
Yeah.
Everyone falls asleep around me. I can't sleep at all because my adrenaline is through the roof. I haven't been out of one building for 4 years, and suddenly I'm in an airplane. And I turn on the, you know, the TV to like watch some TV, and just channel after channel is my face.
Mm.
Just my face. Next channel, my face. And I was just like, what is happening?
I can't even imagine.
And, you know, my mom talked to me when I was in prison, like, this thing has gotten out of control. It's, like, in the media everywhere. But there's only so much that I could really absorb about that while I was in a prison cell. Like, I had 5 channels of Italian television. And I was, you know, the story of what was going on with the case was on those channels a lot.
Yeah.
But it still felt very isolated to Italy. I did not know that I was going to come home and, you know, Easy Street Records was going to have "Welcome Home, Amanda" on like the billboard.
And it's like,
I was like, what?
And it's like kind of nice.
And it's so nice.
Like, also like,
but how do you know me?
Yeah.
You know. And so, yeah, I came home to a world that seemed to know who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not know what to do about that. So, yeah, it was bizarre.
And just a very strange kind of fame. The first group that you spoke to after you got out was actually a high school class. Your former high school teacher had asked you to come in and speak to the class. And there was a student that asked you a question that really rattled you.
Yeah. So, and I was not, you know, this was very shortly after I got home. This was like a few months after I got home. And one of my English teachers from high school stayed very close to me and was writing me throughout my imprisonment. So very sweet person. She invited me to just come and talk to her class about the experience. And I didn't really even know what to say at that point, but I showed up and I talked a little bit about what happened. And then at the end of this, you know, short, you know, 45 minute class, one of the kids raises their hand and their question was, so what's it like to be famous? And I was like, I am famous for something that has nothing to do with me. Mm-hmm. And I've slowly, over the course of years, realized that and come to terms with the fact that there is very likely nothing I will ever accomplish in my life that I will actually do that will come to define me more than having been accused of something that I didn't do. And if and that's just true. And that sounds such like such a bummer. It is a bummer. I'm sorry to bum you out.
Boobs.
But it boobs.
False alarm. False alarm. False alarm.
Clear the air. But it's okay because I feel like, if anything, it's spotlighted for me how we are all defined in ways that we don't have control over.
Yeah.
And mine just happens to be really big and glaring and obvious and in everyone's face. But in a way, that's almost kind of a relief, because how many of us feel like in our small ways we are misunderstood and not seen and unheard. And we don't really have we feel bad about it, but we can't really say why, and no one's really going to feel sorry for us. At least people feel sorry for me. So.
Yeah. Well, the crazy thing is that your name is the most well-known.
Yes.
I don't know how many people in this room or this country can name the person who was actually convicted, who actually did the murder. How many people remember the name of your roommate, your friend?
Yeah,
who was murdered. Killed. Those names are not as well known.
No, and it drives me nuts because very, very often when I tell my story, I get criticized for, you know, telling my story in the first place, because they say, well, the person whose story really matters is your friend who was murdered. And I say, absolutely, her story matters. So does mine. But also, I find it interesting and I find it ironic that so many people have made like actual careers out of criticizing the way I have processed the trauma of my life. And so they are profiting off of processing my trauma that was a result of another friend's trauma. And I just don't know if they see the irony of that.
Yeah. After watching the Netflix documentary, I felt embarrassed of being a journalist, honestly.
Yeah, it's not a good look these days.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like, the guy that they did pick to focus on the most, he was exceptionally crass. But I was thinking, I mean, I was a journalist for 20 years. I mean, I could still be considered one, but like in the news. And I had to do stories where like a kid went missing. I had to knock on this woman's door. How do you feel? You know, they found the body. How do you feel? I had to do those stories. Shoot. And I will never do those stories again, because it's not how you treat people, you know?
Right.
And we're so used to the sensationalism and thinking, well, we deserve to know. That's what the news is, you know, they're delivering the news, but how much do we
exactly
need to
like
know?
Is it in the public interest to be the ones who are telling the mom that their child, that they found the child's body? Like we need her first reaction.
Yeah.
Like, how do we need her first reaction?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's great. And I think that it's good that that journalists are sort of taking a step back. I mean, sort of forcibly, because the industry is not looking good for journalists.
This is my last night of work, ladies and gentlemen. Did they bring you here to tell me this?
We need need your reaction.
That is
kind
of a fun way to learn, at least. Yeah.
No, I mean, the industry is collapsing. It's harder and harder to be an ethical journalist.
Yeah.
And the safe way of being, the profitable way of being a journalist is to just copy someone else's work without doing any of your own work. And that's because people are also, us as consumers, are not really wanting to pay for good journalism anymore. So there's that problem. It's a brutal cycle. And we're getting what we don't pay for.
Well said. I'm curious because... Yes!
Pay her!
We are exactly in the demographic that is the most drawn to true crime. It's usually women in their 30s, 40s.
Brunettes,
girls, especially Jewish women. I'm actually not interested in that genre.
Neither am I.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
So I think a lot of people in this room might be. I'm curious what you think about that genre, because it is huge, and there's, you know, it started small, and there's podcasts and there's TV shows. Using these terrible crimes as entertainment, what do you think about that?
Well, have you listened to my podcast at all, Labyrinth?
I've listened to a few episodes,
okay,
yeah.
We just put out a whole big series about this called Blood Money.
Okay.
Which goes actually into the history, because I was actually really curious about this, because I have a lot of thoughts about what's going on modern day, like how people's worst tragedies are not just being amplified in media, but also on social media, and we feel compelled to put our own tragedies out there, or else it doesn't really exist, and then it gets recycled and turned into someone else's entertainment product, because we don't really have control over what we put on. We don't have a say. We don't own the material that we put out on our own profiles. That was a learning experience, let me tell you that. But also, I was curious to know, like, what is the history of this? And it shocked me to learn that, like, true crime has been a solid industry for a long, long time, like, since we were printing things. Like,
I guess tarring and feathering is the original kind of, like, everyone gather around and, like...
Yeah, everyone gather around, public executions, all of that. But even, like, it was very common for people back in ye old times to... make crime scenes available for the public to just walk through and see the bodies for themselves, and like take little knickknacks and little souvenirs from crime scenes. Like, that was a thing. Or people would be able to purchase the hangman's rope by the inch. Like, that was a product. So in some ways it's gotten better. and in other ways it's just become so normalized that, again, people feel like they're entitled to other people's worst tragedies.
Yeah.
And that's just crappy for the people who find themselves at the center of them.
Yeah. I mean, people who have listened to Your Last Meal know that it does not center around death. It's just a catalyst.
Just a macabre title.
It's just, I know. Well, it's like, you know, it's a catalyst for talking about foods that people like. But I read something a couple years ago that, you know, people... think that the concept of the last meal is like exactly what you're talking about, because it is entertainment, you know, in some places where it is still legal to execute people, you know, they'll print it in the paper and it's like a little bit too much of a fun fact.
Right.
You know, it kind of like lightens the mood that this person's being executed. People
right.
Are like,
and then,
ooh,
like, how does like Domino's think about that if it happens to be a Domino's pizza? Is like that an advertisement?
Kind of like
is
the
it?
Peloton on Sex and the City when Big died on it. That's a deep cut from a Sex and the City pizza. It's not that deep of a cut.
When was Sex and the City out? Was that a thing when I was in prison? I never really watched it.
I don't know the years. I think it was already done.
It was
but
already done.
But there's the new And Just Like That, and that's where he died on the Peloton.
I see.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay,
okay, so
I have
on
no
that
idea
note.
What you're talking about.
Well, I think that we have different genres of entertainment too, because I know that you're into Dungeons and Dragons and Ren Fairs.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're saying you don't like to get into a corset?
I haven't yet, but I like cats too.
Okay, we got
where,
the cats on.
That's where we merge, yeah. So I did read that, like, kind of on that note with culture, that when you were in the car, I think just leaving the prison, didn't your mom hand you her phone?
Oh, yes. She handed me her smartphone, which didn't exist when I went into prison, and she was like, call everyone. Everyone wants to talk to you, and it's a screen with no buttons, and I was like, ow! What do I do? Yeah. So she had to dial it for me.
Was there anything else like that when you got home that...
was just new?
God, when I like my mom had on the news, and just on there's the news, and then there's the side of the news where all of the Twitter comments were happening, and that was just like, that's no longer a thing. But when I first got home, like, Twitter was part of the news. It was just like adjacent to the screen on the news. Like, yeah, it was bizarre to me that it was like, oh, everyone's just live commenting to the news as it's happening. That's interesting.
Well, it's kind of like a different version of talk radio, like Bob and Muckle Teo, you know, it's like, what do you have to say?
Yeah, but just like constantly streaming.
Yeah. So I'm curious, because you were talking about the fact that this will be the thing that you're most known for, whether you like it or not. And I read that you kind of had this fantasy of living in a tiny village in Germany and being a seamstress and, you know, not being known. If there was, I mean, it's kind of like old soap operas, like if everyone took an amnesia pill and the only thing they couldn't remember was, you know, this terrible thing that happened to you.
Oh, yeah.
And that was all clear. And people just knew you, your friends and your family. What do you think you would be doing with your life? What would you want to do with your life if it wasn't centered around what you've ended up doing?
Gosh, that's a great question. I mean, I'd probably be swing dancing a lot more.
Mm-hmm. A little more jaunty.
Yeah, just be jaunty a little more. Yeah, try out funnier outfits. No, mm-hmm. I actually love funny outfits despite everything.
We'll get to your wedding.
Yeah, what would I be doing differently? That's a great question. Well, now I'm a new mom, so I'm just momming the crap out of everything, and I'm just being a mom, which is, if you're moms out there, you know what that feels like. So I'm trying to figure out my life balance again from that.
Amanda has a toddler and a newborn.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. For those who know what that experience is like. Actually, it's awesome. My daughter is super chill with the new baby.
Oh, good.
And he's sleeping really well. So
Yeah.
I don't know how to answer your question, because I don't spend too much time fantasizing about the reality that isn't.
Right.
I try to spend more time being at peace with the reality that is.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of naturally gorgeous, off-the-beaten-path vacation spots with small-town charm, you're going to want to plan a visit to Washington State's Kitsap Peninsula, where you can grab a scoop of homemade ice cream and stroll around the adorable European seaside village of Paulsbo, or walk on the ferry in Seattle and get off in downtown Bainbridge Island. And May is the perfect month to visit Bremerton or Silverdale, where you can get out of the city and into the forest in just 15 minutes for a beautiful hike. Enjoy a farm-to-table meal at Bremerton's Restaurant Lola, a Black-owned business. I really need to make the trip out there for their Creole brunch. And in the morning, stop by Saboteur Bakery for croissants that are so flaky and buttery, you'll think you're in Paris. There's also a gorgeous golf course in the middle of the forest, and there are several naval museums in Bremerton. Go to visitkitsap.com/yourlastmeal to learn more. That's KITSAP. Or you can find a link in the show notes. Play and stay on the Kitsap Peninsula, the natural side of the Puget Sound.
Let's talk about food.
Yay,
yeah. I love food. So I want to start with your childhood, because mm-hmm. you grew up with divorced parents,
yes.
and it sounds like you had two totally different culinary cultural experiences happening.
Yes. It was so fun going from one house to the other, because at my mom's house, my mom was born in Germany. We were always having, you know, Schwetzchenknödel and Spätzle and Rouladen and stuff like that. Mm. And then my dad's house is hot dogs, hamburger helper, Cocoa Puffs. And so, you know, I grew up with just like a deep, deep awareness of different cultures and that come with different expressions of food and also different table manners. There's
I love
so,
this story.
Yeah, this is great. So at my dad's house, and I don't know what actually is the American way of doing this. I'm confused about if this is the actual American way or if this is just my dad being weird. But like, my dad sort of insisted that as I eat at the dinner table, I have one hand in my lap politely, and the other hand is for using to eat. Like, and I only use this hand if I need to cut something, and then I set down my knife and I put it back in my lap. So here I am at my dad's house being
very polite. That's pretty polite for hot dog town.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
You know? Because there was that hand on the box of the hamburger helper.
I know.
Like, maybe his other hand was down below.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? But then if you go to my mom's house, if I start doing that, someone at the dinner table is going to be like, what are you doing, fooling with yourself down there? Like, get that hand on the table. So.
Yeah, keep it up there where we can see
it. Yeah, where we can see it.
So have you, do you cook German food, like, now that you have your own family
oh,
and
yeah.
doing your own traditions?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And yeah. my husband is, like, full hog in it. Like, he has mastered the pretzel. He has
yeah.
mastered the schnitzel. So we're
schnitzel master.
That's what we call him.
Yeah,
in the bedroom. No, just kidding. It's like, what does that mean?
We know what
imagine
it means.
What that would look
everyone
like.
Gets to have their own special meaning for it. That's why you're here, to tell your story. Yeah. So for the holidays, for Thanksgiving, for example, I'm always interested when there is like an immigrant in the family or like a full immigrant family. Did your mom, do you have like a hybrid, or do you do like totally traditional Thanksgiving meal?
Well, so here's a question. Is macaroni and cheese a thing that Americans do during Thanksgiving? Because
I was just talking about this the other
I'm
day.
I'm so confused by this. I've heard people do that. I've never done that. But at the same time, like, one of the things that is like a staple for big family gatherings is something that we call rotkohl. Mm-hmm. Does anyone know what rotkohl is?
No.
It's German red cabbage.
I've had that.
Yeah,
it's kind of sweet and sour.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's like
really
the red version or the purple version of sauerkraut. And I love it. And I make it with everything. So that's something that we typically have regardless of the holiday.
Have you just recently encountered a mac and cheese on a Thanksgiving menu?
Well, okay. So my mother-in-law was saying that she went to Costco and they have like these pre-packaged Thanksgiving dinners for people who can't be bothered. Mm-hmm. And macaroni.
No shade.
No shade. They can't be bothered. And macaroni and cheese is part of it. And I was just flummoxed. So...
We didn't grow up with it either, but I think some people definitely do. Does anyone in this room do mac and cheese for Thanksgiving? A little bit, yeah.
Yeah? Yes. Wow. Oh, oh. A strong feeling.
I know.
Started
no.
a conflict
no.
here.
So I know you're a New York Times bestselling memoirist, but I found in my research a cookbook written by Amanda Knox called Keto Recipes for Women Over 60.
That does not sound like me.
When did you write it? This is just a dumb joke in here. I'm done with that now. Okay, we're moving on. We're moving on. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Okay, so what was the food like in prison?
Oh. You know, a lot of people think that it's better because it's Italy.
Yeah.
And someone resoundedly said yes.
Yes.
Someone who's been to prison both in America and in Italy.
I heard that's where Chef Boyardee got his start.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
yeah, in the prisons.
Yes, in the prisons.
So I'll just tell you what it was. Because I have not been to prison in the United States. I have a lot of friends who have. It's true, actually, I do, because I'm in the innocence world, so a lot of my friends have been in prison. But... that would have been better as a joke. Now it's just sad.
We laugh so we don't cry.
So I've heard like the horror stories about like the rotten bologna and all the stuff here. So I'm sure it is atrocious.
Yeah.
In Italy, we had two meals a day. So in the morning, you were just brought a hot liquid of some kind. So it was either hot milk or hot tea or like, you know, those like instant coffees that sort of tasted a little bit like liquid toast. Anyway, it was a liquid.
Like burnt toast?
Yeah, like burnt toast. And honestly, I didn't mind it after a while. I kind of got used to it. But anyway, so that was our breakfast. And then lunch.
That's your whole breakfast?
Yeah, yeah. Hot
just,
liquid.
Whoa.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, typically what you would do is you would just buy some kind of, you know, biscotti or something from commissary.
So there was a commissary. Okay.
There was a commissary. You could buy things. Then lunch would be, and dinner was actually the exact same thing as lunch. It was a starch, a vegetable, and a meat. So it was usually just some kind of plain pasta, some kind of boiled vegetable, and some kind of very, very cheap meat that was it was all bad. It was very bad. And so what I would do, I lived a lot off of lentils.
Was that something you got in the commissary?
You could get like a little bag of lentils.
And
they were like, well, they were pre-cooked, so it was pre-cooked packages.
Yeah,
and I would just open one of those and put some salt on it and just sadly eat it. But you know what? It was okay. I survived.
Well, I know in American prisons, there can be like a lot of cooking that's done. Like
yes.
People will steal, you know, like little creamer packets and sugar packets and things like that. And then
people
go to the commissary.
Invented. Yeah.
And so I actually had Prodigy, the rapper, who he has since passed, but he was in prison. And then he wrote a whole cookbook about the foods that they would make.
That's what I should have did.
Yeah. And I mean, they would make cheesecake using like the creamers and I don't remember what else, like sugar packets and stuff.
That's
so
clever.
I was wondering if you did that or if that was something common that people did, because they would actually get together and like celebrate someone's birthday. Like, let's make a cake or whatever. They were going to make a lot of Doritos sprinkled on things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Little trick. We didn't have Doritos, but we absolutely got very creative. And that was typically what people did. Most people did not just eat the food that they brought you. You doctored it.
Yeah.
So if they brought you boiled potatoes, what you would do is everyone would pool their boiled potatoes in the cell and you would mix it with like egg and flour and then you would make gnocchi.
Whoa, really?
Yes. Huh. So something like that.
Interesting.
We also made hooch.
He talked about hooch. He told me about hooch.
It was very bad, but did the job.
Would you share your recipe?
Sure. It's a carton of pineapple juice with pizza yeast hid behind the toilet for several months. It was terrible.
You could buy pizza yeast?
Yeah, you could buy pizza yeast.
In the commissary?
Yes.
Why would they sell pizza yeast?
Because it's Italia.
You're throwing your prison pizzas in the air?
People were making pizzas. We were rolling them out with broomsticks, yeah.
But you couldn't bake it?
It was sort of like a Dutch oven bake. We had, we were allowed camping stoves in our cells.
Really?
But we weren't allowed like nutmeg. Because they were afraid we were going to smoke the nutmeg.
The cinnamon challenge.
I don't know. Some Tide Pocket thing or whatever. I don't know. Tide Pocket, whatever. Kids are
Tide Pods.
Tide Pods. That was the reference. Okay.
But Tide Pocket is like Tide Pocket. So I see.
So we had this little camping stove. We had a kind of large saucepan thing, and we would roll out dough and then stick it in the pan with the lid, and we can make ourselves a pizza.
So did you have to eat in your cell? There wasn't a
there was no dining hall. There was like a little slot in our door that we had to stick our plate through. They slopped it on our plate and they stuck it back through the door.
Could you see anyone else?
Yeah, so it was one long hallway, and there were cells on each side of the hallway, so you could have a chat with the people who were in the cell across from you.
Yeah.
Or, as was typical, you would go to your door and say, "Affacciati!" And then whoever you were calling would come to the cell door that was down the hallway, and you'd have a conversation across the hallway, and people would be like, "Shut up!" So there's a lot of yelling.
What does that mean?
Affacciati?
Uh-huh.
It means, we don't have a direct translation in English, but it basically means face yourself.
Yourself.
Yeah, reveal yourself, basically. Come to the door.
Okay.
Like, get out here. And it's affacciati. So faccia is face. So face yourself out.
Yeah. Were you dreaming of certain foods?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yes. I've had indecent thoughts about sushi. Very indecent thoughts. Just walking around, like, mesmerized at the memory of sushi. Mm. That was the thing that I craved the most when I was over there.
Do you remember the first thing that you ate when you got home?
Surprisingly, I didn't eat for a week.
At all?
At all. I was, like, so sort of shocked and adrenaline running through my system that I could barely sleep and I couldn't eat for like a week.
That's terrible.
Yeah, and my family like wanted to have a big party. They had a big cake and everything, and I just couldn't stomach anything.
Yeah.
I was even having trouble, like, I have my entire family around me, and my cousins who I haven't seen in years are like, they were babies when I left and now they're little kids and they're running around and everyone's loud and excited and hugging me. And I remember being like feeling really bad because I felt the need to retreat because I had not been around anyone in my family for more than an hour at a time for 4 years. And so it was a lot to be around so many people at once for just indefinite periods of time. And I would get like really quiet and confused. And so it's super real that like the fact that people come home from prison and sometimes they feel like they can't deal with the world and they just need to stare at a wall because that's what they're used to. As sad as a bummer. God, I'm going back to bummer. Sorry, guys.
It's such a bummer. It's going to get fun again.
Okay, okay.
If you like listening to Your Last Meal, you might like watching my new TV show, The Nosh with Rachel Bell. We just wrapped up season one, so there are 4 tasty episodes ready for you to binge at cascadepbs.org. In episode one, I convince an East Coast skeptic that Seattle now has fantastic bagels. And in the season finale, we go truffle hunting just about an hour outside of Seattle. Episodes are a quick bite, just 8.5 minutes long. So grab a snack and cozy up with The Nosh. Available anytime, anywhere at cascadepbs.org or find a link in the show notes.
So let's talk about your last meal. What would you choose to eat for your last meal? Is it fun? It's fun, right? It's just catalyst for conversation. Just said that earlier.
It's just so many death row vibes.
I know.
Okay, so
We're both wearing stripes.
I know. Yeah. Oh God.
Unintentional.
Subliminal messaging. Yeah. So I would probably go for some kind of incredible fusion between sushi and Italian food.
Which the latter probably gets a lot of like raised eyebrows, right? That people think like...
A lot of people think that I would hate Italian food after everything. And the thing is, I didn't get to eat that much Italian food while I was in Italy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Italian food's great. So I would love some like burrata straight from Napoli and some like ceviche, some raw fish. Like that sounds like divine to me.
What's your favorite sushi?
Probably shouldn't say fatty tuna because that's not totally sustainable. But I'm so basic. I love a salmon sashimi. Just give me the raw fish.
Yeah,
I love it.
Well, we have a little surprise for you.
Ooh.
We did a little hybrid of sushi ish Japanese food and Italian food. Everyone in the audience is going to get theirs.
Yay.
So we have a fabulous caterer and we came up with this idea. Oh, so we did onigiri. So for those who don't know, it's like a Japanese rice ball and you usually stuff it in the middle. So this one is stuffed with smoked mozzarella and basil.
Oh, yes.
And then this one, I'm really proud of this one. This is a matcha cream cannoli. With black sesame seeds.
With black sesame.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So everyone will be getting their onigiri. They're going to pass them out. And then on your way out, as we leave, you'll get your cannoli. Isn't that like, take the cannoli or something? Is that a thing? I never saw that movie. Is that good? So have you ever had onigiri before?
Of course I've had onigiri. Yeah. Do we eat it now?
We can. Yeah. We don't have, it's like a cooking show. You have to take a bite, right? And then make the face in the camera.
Mm. Yeah.
I'll make the face.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
That's good. You're welcome.
That's awesome. Thank you.
So I read that you're a little bit of a pizza snob.
I am a pizza snob. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I kind of don't eat pizza unless it's actually made by an Italian.
And
was that really bad?
So did you, I know you've been back to Italy since, did you have a chance to then eat good pizza to know that this would be what to model it on?
Oh, yeah. And I would say before I got arrested, I did get to eat a few pizzas.
Okay,
so that's
good.
How I know
good.
What good pizza is.
Yeah.
So I know what a good pizza is. I know where you can get good pizza in Seattle.
Tell me, what's your favorite place?
Well, O Sole Mio on Vashon Island is amazing.
Okay.
Yeah, they're very, very good.
Are they the ones, do they have like a little shop too? Because somebody, when I came back from Italy, mm-hmm. I had never had pesto as good as I had in Cinque Terre. And somebody said they make really good pesto on this place in Vashon. And I wonder if it's the same place.
Yeah, they have a little store adjacent where they sell like olive oil and wine and all of that kind of stuff.
So, Okay, so that's good.
Yeah, great.
Is it Neapolitan?
Yeah, Neapolitan pizza. Yep.
I want to talk about your wedding because you did. Tell me the theme, because online there's all different kinds. What did you call it?
Well, it was a time travel themed escape room wedding.
Oh, did you actually do an escape room?
Yes. So my husband and I spent an entire year handcrafting puzzles for 25 tables that had to be solved in order for us to end up married at the end of the evening.
Oh, no.
Our guests had to solve all the puzzles for us to walk away as a married couple.
How long did it take?
We had people walking around giving people clues because we also knew that we had an open bar and that meant not everyone was on their best judgment. So eventually they got solved. I think it took about an hour and a half for all of them to get solved.
Okay, so it wasn't like midnight and you're like, we just want to get married.
Yeah. When our honeymoon going to happen?
Yet? Yeah. And you had your guests dress up too, and you guys dressed up.
Yes, yeah. So if you guys go on YouTube, it's a thing. you can actually see how my husband proposed to me. It's all his fault, really. So he proposed to me by making this meteorite crash land in my backyard. And inside the meteorite was this data crystal from the future that told the story of our love, like, story. And so in the future, so he came back in the past and he was like, oh, I must have proposed to you now. So I guess I'm proposing to you now. Will you marry me? It was a whole time travel themed proposal, which you can see on YouTube. But then we decided that we had to then follow that along. We had to keep the story going. And so our time travel themed wedding involved us going into the future, looking ourselves up on the Google of the future, and by so doing, breaking our time streams apart. And we stopped existing. And so the tech support of the future brought all of our friends and family.
This is complex.
Yes, it is complex. Brought all of our family to a bubble outside of space and time. And in the meantime, all of our friends and family were scattered across space and time. So people showed up at our wedding as like googly-eyed aliens from the future and Tyrannosaurus Rexes and everyone in between. It was great.
Yes. But going back to what we said earlier, when I looked this up, you know, there's articles in The Guardian and the headline is like, strange wedding. Yes. Like, they just tried to turn it into like, she's so weird.
The worst possible light.
Yes. Yeah. And I also had read, like, I'm glad that we get to do like a light and a dark with this, because you had said that people don't want you to be silly because then they think that you are disrespecting Meredith, or you're disrespecting the case, as if for the rest of your life, every single day, you're supposed to be in a mourning mood.
Yes. Yeah. I am in black for the rest of my life. Yeah. Because that's the filter through which they see me. I am a tragedy. Mm-hmm. And if I live my life in any way that isn't a tragedy, I am somehow disrespecting that tragedy. Yeah. Yeah. And it's a unreasonable expectation that I just have decided I'm not going to carry.
So. Yay.
Shucks.
Okay, so back to the wedding. Yes. I'm curious what you served. I only saw one picture you posted on Instagram, and it looked like slices of daikon, but they were hot pink.
Yes. Well, so those were things that Chris and I prepared ahead of time. The actual main meal was A pizza. But it was like pizza from the future, so it was all like blue and purple.
You just had them dye the dough.
Yeah.
That's
so
fun.
Yeah, it was super fun. But yeah, my husband and I prepared all of these hors d'oeuvres because we also weren't going to feed anyone until after they solved all the puzzles.
Oh, yeah. Better work fast. Yeah.
So we had all these hors d'oeuvres that we prepared as well, and they were from different time periods. We had four different bars. One was from the 20s, one was from the Viking era, one was from ancient Rome, and one was from the future. And the daikon were supposed to be like alien, like, ideas of appetizers, yeah.
Was it cooked? I'm curious. I was looking at it. I was wondering how it was prepared.
It's more like we pickle it. So you take rice vinegar and stuff, and then you just put food dye in the rice vinegar and all the various yummy stuff, and then you stick in the fridge for a while, and it It absorbs all those great pickly flavors.
It's like a pickled egg, how it was pink. Yeah. So you guys love to cook, right?
Love to cook. It's one of the things that we bonded over when we first started dating. Mm-hmm. I think our first like official date we didn't go out anywhere. We just stayed in, made artichoke risotto, and watched a very, very silly film called Norwegian Ninja. it's very a niche.
Uh-huh. An art film.
it's a bunch of Norwegian guys who become enlightened through their ninja-hood.
That sounds good. Don't worry about it.
It's very good.
Yeah. Before I get to the speed round, you're going back to trial. Is that correct?
That is correct, actually. It's actually good news. Little known fact, I was and remain convicted of a crime that I did not commit in Italy, and that is slander. So I was interrogated without a lawyer. I was interrogated without representation. I was interrogated without being told that I was a suspect.
Yeah.
And I was eventually convicted of slander for the statements that I signed during those interrogations.
Right. Which were in Italian, and you didn't speak fluent Italian.
No, yeah. They were written by the police, but I signed them, and they were used to convict me of slander. And actually, they said in the ultimate conviction that 3 of the years that I spent imprisoned were rightfully served for that offense. And for the longest time, I didn't know if I was going, like, that was just final. That was just it. There was nothing I can do about it. But recently, last year, actually, Italy passed a new law that said that if an international court rules against the final ruling in Italy, you can appeal that final ruling in Italy based on that international court's ruling. And I had appealed that ruling to the European Court of Human Rights, and they ruled in my favor. So I brought that ruling back to Italy and presented my case to ask for that case to be dismissed, and they overturned the conviction, and I now have to go back for retrial.
Wow. So do you have to go to Italy?
I have to go back, and
how
I have
do you
to testify.
Feel about that?
I'm still processing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is the worst that can happen just that...
That they'll reinstate the conviction.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's no way that you would ever have to serve more time?
No, I don't. I think that would be pretty obscene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have to do this? Or are you doing... You said it's a good thing. Are you doing this because you just want to be cleared free?
I don't want to be convicted of something I didn't do.
Yeah.
And... So when I found out that there was a way to address this issue, honestly, it was the Italy Innocence Project's through their support that I even went to do this, because they were the ones who were pushing to change that law.
Mm.
And once they changed it, the representative from the Italy Innocence Project, which didn't exist while I was going through everything, reached out to me and said, I think we want to take on your case as like the first case to embody this law.
Good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Let's do a speed round. That doesn't have to be that fast if you don't want it to be. What is your perfect birthday cake?
Ooh, not a cake.
Okay.
Although I have been watching a lot of the British Baking Show.
Me too. Are you watching the new season?
Yeah, of course I am.
Okay, so not a cake. What would you be your perfect birthday dessert?
Perfect birthday dessert. Well, you know, now I'm going to have to take that back slightly, because I had never tried babka before.
Oh, yeah.
And I just tried babka, and it is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is. I understand why Seinfeld was having such an ordeal over the babka. Although both the cinnamon and the chocolate are incredible. So I could.
Did you go to New York? Did you try it in New York?
I had a friend ship me from New York a babka when we gave birth to our child. So
like a little baby babka.
Yeah, a little baby. A baby and a babka. You know. A baby and a babka, yeah.
I love that. I don't know if that is technically a cake or if it's like an enriched dough, just, like a twisty bread. I don't even
twisty,
know.
Twisty, gooey, cinnamony. It's just so good.
It is good.
Yeah.
Favorite movie theater snack?
I mean, I like me some popcorn, because I like the savory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you put on your popcorn?
I'm going to sound so lame. I don't put anything extra on it because
lame.
I know it's so lame. Well, but because it's already so just covered in stuff and good, like it's already bright yellow and it's like, does it need any more radioactive stuff on it? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Point taken. What is your favorite Seattle restaurant or a dish from a restaurant in, and Vashon can count too, just
yes.
in this region?
Vashon is going to have to count because May's Kitchen, if you've never been, is the best Thai food ever. That's except I've never been to Thailand, but like ever. And it's shocking. It'll make you not be able to eat Thai food anywhere else ever again.
I've heard there was, I don't know if it's still there, Maze was in Wallingford on 45th, and I don't know if it moved and it's the same thing or if it's separate.
I have no idea.
I'll have to look into that. What was, for each pregnancy, or you can choose one, what was your biggest craving?
Ooh, same for both. Kiwi.
Really?
Yeah. I needed me some citrus action. That and pineapple. I don't know.
Scurvy for those babies.
I just like consumed obscene quantities. In fact, my husband like has these fond memories of me just like eating them like raw eggs. Just
do you eat the fuzzy part too?
You can. I would just scoop them out and just glob.
I read that you're a forager. What is your favorite thing to forage and what do you like to make?
I mean, mushrooms by far my favorite thing to forage, because it's scary. No, because you can pick it wrong. You can do wrong. No, but I've had some incredible luck with like lobster and chanterelle mushrooms.
Oh, wow.
And it's so satisfying. In fact, that was going mushroom hunting was the first like thing that I did when I got home that actually really brought me some great mental health benefits. It was like the first therapeutic thing I did that I wasn't even expecting. It was my Italian professor at the UW invited me to go chanterelle hunting with him. And I remember just like walking through the forest and being just shocked at how like soft the earth was.
Yeah.
Because like I had been years in concrete, just concrete everywhere. And then like the softness of the earth, I felt like I was like walking on the moon.
Yeah.
I was like buoyant and I just felt so at peace. So I can walk for days mushroom hunting.
That was Amanda Knox's last meal. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You're such a gem. Thank you so much for coming out. It was so nice to see all of your faces. You know, when you make a podcast or I was in radio for a long time, I don't get to see anybody who's listening. So everybody that I talked to tonight, it was really, really fun. Thanks for coming out. I hope to see you next time. Bye. Make sure you check out Amanda's podcast. It's called Labyrinths. You can find a link in the show notes. She and her husband also co-host a parenting podcast with another couple called Younglings. If you want to learn more about the murder case, there is a 2016 documentary on Netflix called Amanda Knox, or you can pick up her memoir called Waiting to Be Heard. Your Last Meal was created, hosted, and produced by me and is a product of Seattle's Cascade Public Media. Original theme music by Prom Queen. Special thanks to Resty Bugcall for engineering the live event and to the entire events team for creating such a fun night. Anne O'Dowd, Jake Newman, Halen Blanchard, and all of the volunteers. If you want to be alerted to future live events, make sure you're subscribed to my newsletter, rachelbell.substack.com. And if you want access to that VIP area with the complimentary drinks and all of the cheese and the very good snacks, become a member of Cascade PBS. Go to kcts9.org/donate. You can find all of these links in the show notes. You can also follow along on Instagram. I'm Hello Rachel Bell. And you can send me a message at yourlastmealpodcast.com. Always looking for guest ideas, new sponsors of the podcast, and anything else you want to talk about. I'm Rachel Bell, and this is Your Last Meal.